WCKUT, Henry Grimes. And stay tuned for more of the most aesthetic things, feelings in the world.
Welcome, everyone, and thank you for tuning in. I'm Jasmine Amadeid, and you are listening to CKUT 90.3 FM for John Abbott on the Air. Today, we have a very special guest who happens to be my father, Felix Dade. He is a procurement analyst who finally decided to leave his job in order to explore his profession globally and experience other opportunities in the working industry. However, due to specific circumstances, he is now unemployed and having some difficulties finding a job in the midst of a global pandemic. He has joined me today on the show to talk about his situation. Hi, Dad. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Happy to be here.
Previously, you were working at the headquarters of Semafo in Montreal, which is a mining company situated in West Africa. Although you decided to quit your job for another opportunity and to pursue your career outside the country, why did you leave your job at Semafo?
Well, I've been working with Semafo for the past 12 years, and, you know, after 12 years, what happens, you tend to, you know, do things the same way. It becomes a routine work, so it was kind of interesting to find out if there's any other things that I can do. I really wanted to explore my my career outside, and obviously that's what led me to move on to other opportunities.
Very nice. Speaking of new adventures and challenges, can you give us some more information about your latest job?
Well, I left to New Caledonia. New Caledonia is in the South Pacific, what they call an island of no man's land. It's like really, really outside, in between, let's just say it's in between New Australia and New Zealand, about 2,000 kilometers in between both. And very nice island, very nice Pacific area.
And which company did you work for?
I left to work with Vale. Vale is an international company. It's a mining company, one of the biggest mining companies in the world. And it was a great opportunity for me to you know, go and explore other avenues of my career. And so, yes, I was employed as a procurement analyst for a project. And the project was meant for 2 years. And, yeah, it was fun to explore this avenue.
How was the new lifestyle?
Very different. I would say, first of all, the weather is fantastic. There's no winter. There is no snow. It kind of changed the whole perspective of life. I mean, living year-round with the sun by the ocean, and being able to do trails, track, and it was very interesting. Pretty much getting close to nature and doing things outside rather than being inside here. I would say it's not. I don't love Canada. I love Canada with all my heart. But if Canada was 24/7 tropical, that would be great.
I wish I was there. Just out of pure curiosity, did you miss your family while you were away? I don't mean to stir up the pot or anything.
This is something that everybody asks me, this question. The contract was for my family for 2 years. That was the contract period. But unfortunately, at the time that I was hired for this job, it was impossible for the whole family to live at the same time. So the idea was to, you know, hop on there and, you know, sketch and see what's out there, see how I can settle my family in New Caledonia. But unfortunately, that didn't happen. So here we are.
Even though your time was cut short, you seem to have enjoyed yourself within the time you spent in New Caledonia. By the way, how was your experience traveling back to Montreal from all the way in New Caledonia during a pandemic?
That was a very trying moment. Obviously, you know, being out there, it was very, very unnerving for anybody to travel So it was difficult to travel. The country was in a lockdown for a very long time. There was no flights, so the only flights out to Canada back was through special flights, and that had to be like booked way in advance. So after my contract had ended, I had to travel through several time zones. Obviously, I had to travel from New Caledonia to Japan, and Japan to Vancouver, and Vancouver back to Montreal. So it was very, very interesting. I would say all the airports were very vacant. There were you couldn't see anybody around. The only people in the airport were people that were traveling and the working crew. And that was a very minimized working crew. So it was very, very interesting. The only way to do this is to make sure that you're very much isolated from people. What I did especially was, I hired a bunker in Japan and went to sleep for the next 8 hours. Obviously, my transit time was that period. And that took me out of circulation. Then from Japan to Vancouver. Vancouver, obviously, I had opportunity to travel business class, so it was very secure, I'd say. So it was quite interesting, quite unnerving. Obviously, everybody have to have their mask on, and you watching to make sure that nobody's sick around you, nobody's coughing. That was quite interesting. So going through Vancouver was quite interesting. Checking back into Montreal or checking back into Canada, obviously, you have that gun shooting on your head to make sure that you're not, you don't have a fever or anything as such, so it was quite interesting, quite unnerving until I got back home. Obviously, my family couldn't come and get me at the airport, so I had to take a taxi. And quite interesting, nobody wanted to touch me. My family didn't want to give me a hug. So I had to go through the basement door and stay there for the next 2 weeks in quarantine. So it has been a very trying moment, very trying times, very challenging. But obviously, take it one day at a time, ride it all in the stride.
Yes, we are all going through some sort of struggle trying to live our lives around this virus. Very challenging times. Speaking of the pandemic, were there a lot of cases in New Caledonia?
Yeah, we were very lucky. When the pandemic came about, obviously, that really hit hard in March. So there was a complete shutdown of the whole country. The lockdown, the quarantine, self-quarantine was very, very strict, which helped the country to stop the spread of this virus. So the way it is like everybody had to be in their houses, in their apartment. The only way to get out of your apartment is to go online, fill out a form stating where you're going, when you're going, and when you're coming back. And you could be stopped by the police at any time. And if you don't have that paper on you, you could be fined. So the strict rules help the country to stop the spread of this virus. If I remember correctly, during the time that I was there until the time that I came back to Montreal, there was only 18 cases and no deaths. So this was very much controlled. I'm very impressed about how this went about. What I see here in Montreal is very saddening. But I guess we will have to learn from our mistakes. Now we're going to a second lockdown, maybe going to a second lockdown, and that's because nobody's listening. You have to take this very seriously if you don't want to spread this virus.
I totally agree. Since you're jobless, how has your time off affected your mental health in any way?
Well, I can say it's been challenging. Pandemic, no job, always inside. I was trying to do things around the house, but haven't had the courage as yet. I believe that, you can say there's a mild depression, but that's something that can be controlled or that can be overcome in the long run. So what I do, I occupy myself looking for jobs on the internet, applying through Job Boom and Monster and LinkedIn and all those search engines. I've had a few hits here and there, but nothing really concrete. But I'm confident. I'm confident that things are going to fall into place eventually. It's just a question of time. I'm very impatient sitting around and doing nothing because my life is my family and my work. And I love my work. And if I'm missing my work, you know, it's a downer. But I think it's something that can be overcome in the short term.
It imbalances your routine, do you find?
Yeah. You're just looking at the fact that, you know, I was away for a year. And then coming back is like, you know, coming back to something completely different. It's not like I came back and started going back to work. So, you know, it takes an adjustment. There's an adjustment period. So I need to work on that. I need to work on that. That is going to take some time adjusting, having to do nothing. Obviously, my wife is setting up a honey-do list for me. I got to do some painting. I got to do some, you know, renovation in the house. So obviously that will keep me occupied in the next couple of weeks or months, I would say. Who knows how far this virus is going to stretch, and I'm hoping things will turn around very quickly.
That's good. You have some things planned. What are your biggest concerns given that you have been unemployed for a couple months now?
Yeah, my concern is getting bored and getting out of touch in terms of the workforce. I've never been out of work for more than a month. This is like a record. Been out of work for the past almost 3 months now. It's a challenge for me. So what I'm trying to do right now, what I'm doing now, is taking online courses, online programs, or attending conferences with the association that I'm with, which is the Supply Chain of Canada. So these programs or conferences that bringing me up to par, bringing me up to date on what's going on in my field of study or field of my career, if I may say. So this is keeping me abreast, and I believe that once I'm ready to go, I'll be ready to run.
Speaking more about your courses, could you explain what kind of courses you're studying?
Well, these courses are pretty much the cutting edge or the trend in which the supply chain management or supply chain is heading towards. Everybody's talking about analytics. Everybody's talking about, AI. This is something that after listening or going through these conferences, these are collection of data and things that we already do. But in the future, the mundane or the routine work is expected to be automated. And which is good, which will give us the opportunity to focus on what's important than doing day-to-day work, day-to-day routine work, which gets mundane, gets boring after a certain period of time. So that's where this field is going. The supply chain is heading towards automating routine work, which is good. One of the questions I was asking, looking to eliminate the procurement aspect of it, and said that's not true. What they're trying to do, or what they're doing, is that gathering data to ensure that, you know, to help the machine learning process. So what we're doing is gathering information so the machine is going to learn the processes, and then in the long run be able to recommend, you know, decision making, or see ahead, or be proactive, see forecasting what could happen during the process of the supply chain.
So you were talking about AI and how it's evolving very quickly, and you believe that, well, at first you believe that your procurement analyst job would be discontinued. If that ever happened, would you have a backup plan?
Well, backup plan is, well, this is what I know. I know procurement. So the only backup plan that I have is just try and stay ahead of of the what's changing, how the supply chain is changing, being in the head or being part of the recent would help me to propel into the next level.
Do you believe this worldwide epidemic is responsible for slowing down the process of you finding a job?
Well, at first I thought it wasn't until I got back to Montreal. Obviously, you know, everybody's cautious. There's a lot of people that are unemployed right now, because of this pandemic. Most people have been laid off, so the job market is very tough. There's a lot of experienced and very knowledgeable people out there that are out of a job. So the competition is very, very is challenging. So obviously you have to be at your best at all times if you want to get a job. So that's the key, you know, sell yourself. That's the whole idea. You need to prepare for interviews and stuff like that, you know, polish up on your knowledge, polish up on the language skills. I've experienced that. Obviously you notice that I'm English speaking, but I speak French as well, but my French is not as good as my English. So obviously going through interviews in French is quite challenging. Somebody who is a native person, obviously in an interview as such, would win, even though they may not have all the qualifications. But it all depends on what the company is looking for or the organization is looking for. So these are some of the challenges that I'm facing, but I'm working on it.
I was doing some research on New Caledonia because I feel like not a lot of people know about this territory. Very beautiful place, by the way. But something that I discovered was that it is a French territory. Therefore, everything must have been in French. Given that English is your first language, do you think your language skills have evolved since you were in New Caledonia?
Yes, I believe so. I'll tell you one thing. When I was in New Caledonia, the French, these are French from France, they thought, you know, or they ridicule the Quebecois French because they believe that we have been left in the past. They have evolved, and most of the language is very French. They realize also that most of the Canadians that work in New Caledonia, their French is more, more English in a sense, anglicisme, that's what it is. So it was quite an interesting time. Pretty much have to learn French all over again. I was very very interested to learn that level of French or that type of French or that, you know, culture. Obviously, one of the things that I noticed was culture and expressions were quite different from in Quebec as it is in New Caledonia or as it is in France. So the French from France that worked in New Caledonia always had different expressions that it was quite interesting to know because you didn't understand it because you didn't know it because of the culture. So learning a new culture was quite interesting. I enjoyed it, and I'd hope that, you know, it would be a little bit longer to very much adapt.
Dad, you had to learn to be independent from a very young age. It shows through your work ethic and the successful career you are still trying to develop as we speak. Would you be able to explain the story behind these statements?
Well, look at it this way. I was born in Ghana, and I left Ghana when I was 19 years old. I came here with my older brother. My father was already here. Obviously, he sponsored my brother and I to come here. My father studied in McGill. He did his master's in social studies. He has his bachelor's degree in business administration. He had opportunity to go to school here. And obviously, during those times, you know, the government of Ghana called them back, all those graduates back to Ghana to build the country at the time. Obviously, he kept his citizenship here, and that gave me the opportunity to come to Montreal or to come to Canada. So I came to Canada, and my level when I got here, 19 years old, was to go through CEGEP. So I went through CEGEP. I did the electrotechnology program. I did some university. I wanted to go to university, but obviously, you know, working and going to school is not as easy as it seems to be. Most people are privileged, I would say, to have a home here and just go to school. Working and going to school is a big thing. It's a big thing. You have to give 100% to your schoolwork and, you know, obviously go to work at the same time. It's not easy. I managed to go through a certain level. I couldn't do university because it was difficult to work and go to university at the same time. In my field, what I wanted to do, was engineering. But let's just say that didn't happen. Changed my career completely to supply chain, and that's what I've been doing since. So, you know, I encourage all the kids out there, all the people that have the opportunity to go to school, focus, do your work, you know, that's your life. Just do it, and you'll be thankful in the long run.
Okay, so you wanted to be an engineer, right?
Yes.
And you ended up studying electrotechnology, as far as I'm concerned?
That's correct.
Considering everything happens for a reason, do you regret any of your choices that you've made in your education life?
Well, in my education life, I believe maybe I could have done better. That's my only regret. But, you know, knowing that and then picking up from where I realized my mistakes, obviously I couldn't go back. So just focusing on what's ahead and trying to do what's right for me and my family, and then to teach my family or my kids to do the right thing, with my support, of course.
Since you are all for new beginnings, new adventures, experiences, what exactly are you looking for in your next job?
Is to get back into the expatriate form of work. I like to see new cultures, different cultures. I like to see something different other than just stay in the office. I like to be close to the action. I'm in the mining sector. Working with Semaphore was usually working in a centralized environment, meaning the procurement services were in Montreal, and we sourced all around the world and shipped products, services, equipment to the mine site. So for me, it will be more interesting being close to the action. So that's why I'm still focusing on going through expatriation. But anything can happen. Things can change. I mean, as you can see, my choices in life has always turned me in different directions. And I'm up for the challenge. Just go for it.
You were speaking about traveling and your interests in being able to experience new cultures. Is there a particular country that you would like to discover?
It would be interesting to go to Indonesia. I like to see Indonesia or Malaysia. I like to experience this kind of cultures. I mean, they're very rich cultures, the very old cultures that are out there. Obviously, coming from Africa, I know African culture. I know about the Guinean culture. Don't quote me on that because I don't know everything. So seeing the other side of the world would be quite interesting.
Even though currently he finds himself unemployed, the most important takeaway is that he took the chance to be able to move on in his profession. Felix learned many life lessons along the way, and there is always a light at the end of the tunnel. I'm Jasmine Amadade, and that concludes this interview with Felix Dade. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
And thanks for listening. This is CKUT 90.3 FM for John Abbott on the Air.
Welcome, John Abbott on the Air for CKUT 90.3 FM. This is Alyssa O'Leary-Horrocks.
Today I'll be interviewing Lynn Horrocks. She's an incredible woman who has traveled the world, exploring new things, and learning more about cultures. Good morning, Lynn, and thank you for joining me. So what are all the places you've been to?
Okay, well, I've been across Canada, been through a fair bit of the States. I've been to England, Ireland, France, Peru, Bolivia, Vietnam, Cambodia, a bit of Laos. I think that's it.
Out of all those places, which are your favorite and why?
I have to say, I loved Cambodia. I loved Angkor Wat. I liked the peace. The feeling was just wonderful. I did like Peru because I really liked the high altitude. It was kind of a rush to be in such a high altitude place and be okay. And Alaska. I really liked Alaska a lot. I liked the roughness of it.
Has any trip been impactful to you due to what you've seen or experienced on the trip?
I think all the trips are impactful because they make you see how other people live. It's really an eye-opener, I find, to... It's just so different. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like Canada at all. I realize we take for granted the good living conditions we have.
So what was your least favorite trip and why?
I didn't have a... I think I liked them all equally. I really did.
Okay. Why do you like to travel?
I'm curious. I really like to see other places. Like, they're so different and they're so beautiful. I mean, the temperature variances. I mean, to live... I don't know how they do it in Asia because, you know, it was like 45 degrees and, you know, 100% humidity, and it was your body adjusts after a while, but it's really something to deal with. And I just like experiencing all of the different things that the whole world has to offer.
Has COVID impacted any of your travel plans for this year or following years?
Yes, a lot. It's affected just my family traveling with, am I allowed to say, your grandfather? Yeah, we haven't been able to get into the States with the trailer, so that's been a disappointment because we really like doing New England and that. That friend of mine, Nancy, that we did Peru, Cambodia, Vietnam, we did that together. We're two older ladies that like to travel together. We had really hoped, actually we were considering Africa. It wasn't India because she won't go to India with me. We were considering South Africa and perhaps Kenya, whatever. Anyway, and that's off the... COVID has removed that from our lives.
Out of all the places you haven't been to yet, what is at the top of your bucket list?
I have a hankering to see India. I can't even tell you why. It's just something that I've wanted to do. I'm not so much for the big cities, not Mumbai and that, because I do find that it's overwhelming, some of those really crowded cities. But I think India has beautiful scenery, and I think there's a lot more to see in India than just Mumbai.
Okay. So you've been to both Machu Picchu and Angkor Wat. Out of those two, which do you think was your favorite to visit?
Angkor Wat.
And is it due to culture or food or maybe just visuals? What made that one of your favorite?
I think cultural. I don't know. Until you actually go to Angkor Wat, there's a weird feeling you get. It's... I know it sounds corny, but it's got like a real Zen feeling. And it just... I don't know. You're just walking in and you start getting the feeling. That's one of my high points.
And finally, to close off the interview, do you have any advice for people who want to travel in their life?
Don't let it frighten you. I would just say go. It works out. I will say, though, if you're traveling alone, travel with a decent company with a good reputation. That's safe. You know, we did do... Well, that'll hark back to that other question. In Peru, Nancy and I did it, and it was a less reputable touring company that we went with, and it showed. Mm-hmm. When we went to Angkor Wat, and well, we did Vietnam and Cambodia, it was a much better company, and it just made a huge difference.
Thank you so much for joining me in this interview.
This has been Alyssa Horrocks with Lynn Horrocks for John Abbott on the Air, CKUT 90.3 FM.
We are out of time, so I'd like to thank our listeners, our audience, for tuning in for the latest episode of John Abbott on the Air. This has been Patrick Adelstein, and this has been John Abbott on the Air on CKUT 90.3 FM, and we'll catch you in the next episode. Take care, everybody.
Happy birthday to you, first anniversaire, samedi midi et terre.